When Nelson Mandela became South Africa's first black president in 1994, Zelda LaGrange was a 23-year-old Afrikaner typist raised to fear black people. Born into apartheid privilege with a live-in black domestic worker who wasn't allowed a bath, LaGrange had voted against ending apartheid just 2 years earlier. Her father had warned her about Mandela's release from prison. "Now we're in trouble. The terrorist has been released." Like many white South Africans, her family stockpiled food before the 1994 election, expecting civil war and chaos. Yet within months, this same young woman would begin a remarkable journey of transformation, eventually becoming Mandela's most trusted assistant for nearly two decades. Their unlikely relationship between a former apartheid supporter and the world's most famous political prisoner became one of history's most powerful examples of reconciliation. Through intimate daily interactions, LaGrange witnessed firsthand how Mandela's extraordinary capacity for forgiveness could transform not just a nation, but individual hearts, including her own. In 1994, LaGrange was unexpectedly summoned to lunch with President Mandela, as he described his 27 years in prison, tending his tomato garden, working in the limestone quarry that damaged his eyes, sleeping on a thin mat. She was moved to tears. Most striking was his complete absence of bitterness as he recounted these hardships with animation and even humor. When she expressed sympathy, his response was gentle but firm. He didn't want pity. What mattered wasn't what happened to you, but how you handled those events. Later that year, while recovering from eye surgery, Mandela asked LaGrange to read him the Afrikaans newspaper. Though she initially stumbled over words, he patiently encouraged her, correcting her pronunciation, moments of mentorship that transformed their relationship. A pivotal moment came when Mandela introduced LaGrange to General Constant Voljean, leader of the right-wing Freedom Front Party. With his warm smile, Mandela proudly presented her as a true Boeremeise, Afrikaner farm girl, bridging two worlds that had long been divided. LaGrange's relationship with Mandela evolved rapidly. After accompanying him to an event with Queen Noor of Jordan, she found herself seated next to the Queen, intimidating for a young Afrikaner without diplomatic experience. When Mandela called her darling after handing him his speech, she felt both embarrassment and warmth. The 1995 Rugby World Cup became a pivotal moment. Though considered a white man's sport, black people had played rugby for decades before apartheid excluded them. Mandela's decision to wear a Springbok jersey for the final against New Zealand unified the country. South Africa's victory sparked celebrations that crossed racial lines. During a legal battle with former SA Rugby Union president Dr. Lewis Light, Mandela insisted on defending himself and greeted all the prosecuting lawyers before his own team. When LaGrange expressed anger about this, Mandela taught her, "The way you approach a person will determine how that person reacts to you. If you start off by disarming your enemy, the battle is halfway won." Through serving Mandela, LaGrange underwent a profound transformation that challenged her foundational beliefs. She struggled to reconcile her apartheid upbringing with serving a man her community had demonized, a conflict that caused sleepless nights and deep questioning. When she sought guidance from Reverend Byers Nauta, a white South African ostracized for opposing apartheid, he advised her not to burden herself with others' prejudices, suggesting her journey was part of a personal awakening each person must experience individually. As her transformation deepened, LaGrange's relationships changed significantly. She found herself defending ANC policies at family gatherings and challenging racist comments, gradually losing connection with friends who maintained white superiority attitudes. Some childhood friendships dissolved entirely as their worldviews diverged. "Through serving the president, I completely embraced the new South Africa," she reflected. "I changed internally to more easily accept and respect people regardless of skin color, cultural beliefs, or hair texture." This transformation manifested in her choice of social circles and her efforts to learn phrases in different African languages. As Mandela aged, LaGrange evolved from secretary to fierce protector. She meticulously managed his schedule to prevent exhaustion and used hand signals and proximity techniques to shield him from overwhelming crowds, especially when his hearing aids failed in noisy settings. When people pressed too close, she intervened with diplomatic firmness, earning nicknames like the Lioness, the Witch, and the Rottweiler, titles she wore with pride while protecting the world's most beloved statesmen. By 2004, his active post-presidential schedule took its toll. Mandela announced he was retiring from retirement, declaring, "Don't call me, I'll call you." Despite this boundary, requests continued flooding in, with everyone considering themselves exceptions deserving special access. LaGrange watched his physical decline with concern. By 2011, his vulnerability showed in small but significant ways, like calling her before using the elevator and asking her to check on him minutes later, deepening her protective instincts. By 2011, Mandela's declining health created a family power vacuum, with members competing for control over his legacy and assets through bitter public disputes. LaGrange found herself increasingly marginalized by those suspicious of her influence. In June 2013, Mandela was hospitalized with a severe lung infection from his Robben Island years. Despite being gravely ill and connected to medical devices, his face lit up when LaGrange entered with Graca Machel. Their final meeting occurred on July 11, 2013, though extremely frail and barely conscious, when Machel announced LaGrange's presence, Mandela summoned strength to open his eyes and give her the biggest, brightest smile, their gazes meeting one last time. After Mandela died on December 5, 2013, family politics erupted fully. Despite 2 decades of devoted service, LaGrange was excluded from funeral arrangements and barred from the house. Nevertheless, she attended the ceremony in Kwunu, Mandela's ancestral home, overcome with emotion as his flag-draped coffin passed by. LaGrange's journey with Mandela represents one of the most remarkable personal transformations in South Africa's history. From a young woman raised to fear Black people, to becoming the trusted confidant of the world's most beloved statesman, her story embodies the reconciliation Mandela sought to achieve. "I am an emotional billionaire," she writes, "rich with extraordinary memories." Through her years with Mandela, she learned to see beyond skin color and find dignity in service. Mandela insisted on greeting every staff member, demonstrating that true leadership recognizes everyone's humanity. LaGrange's story showcases Mandela's ability to change hearts through quiet dignity rather than retribution. His simple acts, remembering names, asking about families, broke down decades of prejudice. "He had destroyed all my prejudices about Black people, and I cared for him deeply like a grandparent." Her evolution mirrors South Africa's journey from division to reconciliation. Though the path remains unfinished, her story offers hope that personal change is possible even for those raised in divided circumstances. As she concludes, "We will see him in every sunrise and sunset. We just have to keep looking for him."